Well, welcome back. This is episode number 2 of the podcast. I think we've kind of narrowed it down to the overthinker's path to comedy, but, you know, if you want to send in suggestions or you want to, I don't know, we can call it dog feces or something, I don't know, something stupid. I should probably start the podcast over at this point because I've already derailed, but I'm not gonna. I'm just gonna keep moving forward. So I was thinking, I think the introduction was put up. It's about 7 minutes long or so, and I kind of described what was gonna happen in the podcast. And basically, it was gonna be a little bit about my journey into learning stand-up comedy because I basically just started learning and kind of taking it seriously about 4 months ago or something. I'm actually taking a class that started. And this was after a pretty severe and a terrible life's kind of collapse early in the year where I actually lost my mother. And that was very sudden. She got sick on her birthday. And she was gone within 24 hours. So it kind of showed me how fragile life can be and don't make plans. As the Beatles said, you know, life is what happens when you're busy making plans, and that's extremely, it's true. It's just absolutely true. You gotta take the bull by the horns and make whatever you want happen, or you'll just sit there and do what other people expect of you, and then you're dead. So I'd talked and thought about being a stand-up comic for a long time. Up to that point, I was a videographer slash filmmaker. You talk about stress levels and just pain, that's one thing you do is you just decide to use your brain for a living, and didn't work out all the time, and it's not usually as lucrative as they say in the media or what you see on TV. So I thought stand-up comedy, I'm gonna give it a try. So I'll tell you a little bit, because we got some catching up to do, a little bit about my experience so far and the open mics and performing overall. I'd probably been writing material for, a good year or two. Actually, I think I remember, I looked at my notebook, and the first date that I'd put in my notebook was, it was September 11th, strangely enough, but it was 2011. And, that's when the notebook started. I started writing jokes. I've since learned that most of those weren't jokes. They were just ideas that I had to flesh out. So, I started going up to these open mics in Denton, Texas, and I'd watch the comedians. And I several times I put myself on the list, and by the time it got close, I'd make up some excuse and say, "Oh, I've got to do something. I'm just taking me off the list. I can't do it. I got to go." Or I'd get, you know, scared and just straight up say, "Look, I'm not ready. Material's not ready." Yeah, it was just fear. You know, nobody goes up ready at an open mic. That's what they're for. So I didn't do it. So it wasn't until, like I said, about 4 months ago, and I think that's actually before I started my class, I went up to a place called the Dallas Comedy House. It's in a famous part of Dallas called Deep Ellum, if you're not familiar with the area. And every Tuesday night, starting at, I believe, 8-ish, they have an open mic. And I went up and just completely ate it. It was really awful, embarrassing. I said in the introduction, if you haven't listened to that, a strange thing kind of happened. Like, I had my material and I felt good about it, but it didn't work, and I'm almost positive it was because there was no confidence behind it. I just went up there and said the words because I had 5 minutes and I was determined to get off before 5 minutes. I just wanted to say the ideas that I thought were funny, and if you don't sell them correctly, there's nothing there. You don't give anybody a reason to laugh. So nobody did. Well, except for one, my friend, who had a few drinks, and he was just being kind. I'm sure he wasn't laughing because he actually thought it was legitimately funny. So the strange thing that happened, as I said before, was I really enjoyed kind of bombing. I don't know why, and I've thought about it a lot, and I can't figure out why that was. But I approached a well-known local comic, and he asked me if I went up, and I said, yeah. And I told him, I said, I bombed completely, and he goes, oh, yeah? And then I said, yeah, and I said, I strangely enough, I loved the fact that I bombed, and he goes, that's really weird, isn't it? as in he was agreeing with that, that it had happened to him before, so I don't know if this is something that happens, or if it was, you know, just me and he was just making conversation. But it really felt like he had experienced it himself. So probably a week or two later, I tried it again. I think, I'm not sure if it was, probably the class is the next time I actually got up in front of people and did stand-up comedy with the rules that were being taught to me, which I've been asked not to share by my teacher in this podcast. I wish I could, because it's really interesting, stand-up comedy itself, and the fact that there are rules involved. And I never really thought about that. I just thought comedy is something you go up and you just say funny things and funny ideas. But there is a reason that people laugh. There's a psychology behind it. And the people that have been doing it for decades and learning from the masters before them and before them, they discovered the rules. And they wrote them down and people teach them. Like I said, I won't give those away out of respect for my teacher, who was a tremendous teacher. His name's, I don't know if I should say his name. Maybe I'll bleep it out if not, or just cut it out. But it's Dean Lewis. He's actually been doing this a long time. He's been on Ellen. He's a tremendous comedian. Really, really great stuff. I think you can find some stuff online. I think it's DeanLewisComedy.com. If not, I will make a correction at some point. Check him out. He's a great, great comedian. Anyway, so he's taught me a lot. And those first few times that I went up in front of class to, as they say, pitch your material, but it's basically just a quick, you know, open mic set. Boy, they just kind of stared at me. And these are other comedians. And I was told it was going to be a little bit like that. This was going to be the toughest room I ever played because it was a room full of potential comedians. And man, it was just another horrifying set with no laughter and just stares. And you think, why aren't they laughing? They're not laughing at my material. This happened several times. And as I started learning kind of the format and the way comedy goes, I started eventually getting a few laughs. And see, the thing is that I've discovered, and they teach it, but you don't really figure it out until you go up and try it, is the faster you get to the punchline, the funnier it is, or the more likely, I shouldn't say funnier, the likelier the audience is going to laugh. Take something like Henny Youngman's Take My Wife, Please. I mean, it's a fast setup and punchline. It's really quick. That's why it's a classic joke. I know all you young people that might be listening, and that's not even funny. Just trust me. In context, and you hear the man pitch it, it's a surprise. So, doing that, and then I kind of stumbled into this open mic hosting thing, and there's a story behind that as well. But what happened was there is going to be this festival that happens in Denton, Texas this year. It's called Oaktopia. And what it is basically a rock band slash hip-hop festival. People come out all over the place. They're expecting a ton of people to come out. You got to buy tickets. And it just basically takes over Denton. And I know a guy that was going to have a stage there. It's the owner-operator of Gitmo Records. They're going to be on the map soon, so remember that name. His name is Keldrick Scott, and he's Gitmo, and it's going to blow up. Anyway, we were just talking, and I mentioned that I was doing stand-up comedy, and we kind of talked a little bit about it, and then, you know, I don't remember who, if he just pitched it or somehow in conversation it came up, the organizers of the event found out about this comedy thing, and they thought, well, that'd be a great idea to bring out some comedians. So I thought, well, that's interesting. You know, yeah, I can put it together. And we hired a few, you know, local big names. Paul Varghese, Jason James, Aaron Poor, and Dean Lewis, the teacher I was telling you about. Really just fantastic talent, and they're basically going to be our headliners. And then I wanted to fill it out. My idea was I want to give young people who haven't really had a chance and are you know, struggling to get that break, I wanted to fill it out, the rest of the lineup, with these guys. Give them a shot. So anyway, I was talking to Dean about this, and he actually came up with the idea. He said, well, you should host it. Now, originally my plan was, I told them, look, if I get to put this together, I want 5 minutes. I'm going to take my shot. If I can, I want 5 minutes. Never thought about hosting. I didn't think I was ready for anything like that. And Dean suggested it. And I said, really? Are you sure? And basically his thinking was, is like, yeah, if you get that opportunity, you got to take it. Why not? You know, you're not going to get that all the time. And the more people that see you in your act, the likelier it is it leads to something, be it, you know, a job on a boat or, you know, maybe you play a party or something like that, or, you know, not likely, but you get a big sitcom on CBS. Or I guess you get sitcom on Showtime or HBO, but it's not really the direction I'm looking to go. So in my fear and panic-induced, you know, conversation with him, I said, oh, yeah, okay, why not? I'll give it a try. Now, the show takes place in September, and this, I think this probably started talking and happening and putting it together around June. That's not a whole lot of time for me to become a good comedian. So I panicked, and one of our rules is we're not supposed to do open mics. It's because we want to build up our confidence in class, and then we hit the open mics. I don't have that kind of time. I had to do something. So just one night, it was a Thursday night at a restaurant called the Magic Time Machine in Addison, and they had an open mic, and it was supposed to start at 9 or 9:30, and I go in and I asked, "Where's the open mic?" And the lady at the front, basically, I guess, I don't know if she's the manager or not, she said, oh, and she was surprised. She goes, oh, we haven't had comedians here for a long time. And I was kind of surprised by that, because why wouldn't comedians take advantage of the space? And we talked for a little bit, and I said, look, do you mind if I try to get people back? And she said, sure, go ahead. I don't mind. And I said, well, that's great. Thank you. Do you mind if I host the open mic, thinking I need to get ready for this show in September? And she agreed. And we had a few shows. The first one went pretty well. I bombed pretty bad. There's a story behind that. I decided, well, I was gonna try to do something risky, and I basically just picked a few topics. I don't even remember if they were just personal topics or if they were in the news or whatever. But I wrote them down on a piece of paper, and then we started the show, and there's a lot of people there, and I just tried to riff, and none of it landed, and nobody laughed, and it was just uncomfortable and weird, and I basically just said, okay, enough, let's bring up your first comic, and then I remember I even went the wrong direction. I went behind the comic because there was an audio booth, like an AV booth with, you know, the mixers and the audio and stuff. It's a host or whatever. Should have been in front of the comic so I can give him the light. So I even did that wrong. Excuse me. So as I'm sitting back there as the first comic's going, I'm thinking, this is ridiculous. I can't get anybody to even chuckle. I mean, there should be something. You know, maybe a little light, like maybe that joke hit, and then you go from there. Why did that joke work? Okay, well, maybe that's the kind of stuff I should be talking about. Maybe it was the way I delivered it. But nothing was landing. And I was thinking back there, and I was like, you know what, this is it. I'm going to finish this set, or this night, this open mic, and I'm just basically going to end it. It's over. I'll see if I can't get somebody else to host that show in September. And I basically kind of in my mind made up the idea that I was just done. It wasn't working. I'll find something else to do. So I step back out. After the first comment goes down, and I basically just started riffing without any idea of what I was riffing on. I know at one point I got mad and kind of turned it on the audience and, you know, asked them what was wrong with them. Why aren't they laughing? What's the problem? And I don't remember exactly what it was I said, but I remember they laughed. And it surprised me. So I basically just kind of lightheartedly started harassing them. I know it now to be, it's crowd work. That's what they call it, stand-up comedy. It's crowd work. And they started laughing. So that it really surprised me, and I didn't know why. And everybody afterwards, because I do this stupid thing where I ask people how I did and give me feedback. I probably shouldn't do it, but I do it. And everybody agreed. I got the same feedback from everybody. At first, you weren't very good, but when you just started streaming off the top of your head, it was hilarious. So I don't know why that worked, and I started thinking about it. And even now, as some of this material is starting to work, I'm not really just streaming it. I'm a little more prepared. Now, my jokes are a lot, as they say, I've trimmed the fat off of them. And it is so much easier to actually remember this material. Before, it was these long monologues, and it was killing me, and I was scared to death to go up, because what if I miss this and the punchline, and I screw it up, and I forget? And now it's, you know, 3-4 lines. It's so much easier to remember. So you just pick a topic, like one of them, I have grandfather, and then you remember that. Oh, like, oh, that joke, that's the 3 lines. I can remember that about my grandfather. I remember the joke. So that's helped a lot. So it's been a struggle. That was a condensed version of the struggle. But yeah, that was actually the night I was about to just, I was done. And then I kind of got angry. And, you know, yeah, no, it's my fault when people don't laugh. I get it. It's stand-up comedy. It's not the audience's fault. It's what I've heard. I've heard both sides, but I tend to think it's me. So I was mad because in a way, they were stomping on my dream by not laughing. Like, I'm saying what I think is funny, and you're not laughing, and it's so bad, I've considered, and I'm thinking about just giving it up. How dare you? I was angry, you know? So, as I said, a few more times, kind of started feeding off of that energy where it was working, and tweaked it a little bit, and, you know, I'm still in it. So that's that. So I don't really know how that's going to work out or what's going to happen. I recently took on a full-time job, so I'm a little worried that might interfere with my open mic status, because the newbies tend to go on fairly late, and I got to be at work at, like, you know, 8 in the morning. So I'm not the best morning person in the world. So that's a little bit about my beginning. I kind of wanted to get you guys caught up, and I think from here on out, I'm going to try to maybe post segments if I go up somewhere or whatever like that. I'm going to record the set and then post a little bit so you guys can kind of follow the growth, because I think it might be interesting to keep this up and then in 5 years go back and say, oh, wow, that's when I thought I was really good, and just kind of harass myself and heckle my own material because it was so terrible because I didn't know anything. Hopefully that's the case 5 years from now. I've grown as a comedian, not physically. And as I said, interviews to come. I had a nice conversation with local comedian Jason James, who, through a third party, I heard some of his background, and he's just really a fascinating guy. He's really an intense kind of guy, and I'm not sure if he's aware of his intenseness, but he really is. So I'm hoping maybe he'll be the first interview. I'll talk to him, send him a Facebook message or something like that, because I'd like to talk to him about his experience in comedy, what got him there. And just kind of introduce you guys to some of these local comedians, and hopefully we can get a grasp on what comedy is. And if you're an aspiring comedian, take a shot at it, please. It's, you know, if you've got questions, feel free. That's one of the things that I've noticed about a lot of these comedians. Now, this isn't a blanket statement. I'm not saying every comedian I've met, but they're kind of douchebags. I don't really identify with them, and that really disturbs me too. Because that means I fit in with no one. Like, I don't feel accepted by anyone. I don't feel accepted by the losers because I'm doing a little too well. I don't fit in with the people who are doing really well because I'm not doing well enough. I'm a little loserish because I overthink everything. I'm a tough sell to these groups. I was an athlete when I was younger, but then I stopped playing sports and I kept eating like it, so I gained a lot of weight, and then I had a back injury, so I couldn't, it's just this whole weird twister of life that just this cycle that never stops, and it always kind of puts you in a corner, and you got to find some weird way to get yourself out of it. After I lost my mother, you know, she was my best friend, so I went into a complete, like, nervous breakdown, essentially. And at this point, I decided to take on my first real girlfriend. I had never really done that. I had always kind of made excuses that, oh, it's because of my career. And a lot of it had to do with my weight. And, you know, when you're an overweight person, it affects your self-esteem. It's just part of the rules. And everyone will say, oh, no, it's all confidence. Nobody sees it. But that's BS. I can't even shop at JCPenney's because I have to go to, like, you know, some Walmart big and tall store. There's a section for people like me, you know, and I'm not even 300 pounds. I'm not there yet. I mean, I'm probably close, but, you know, do I really have to shop at a separate section, for God's sakes? It's ridiculous. This is America. And Walmart, isn't that their thing? They cater to the overweight? I apologize if you're like a big-time supporter of Walmart and you're an overweight person. I don't mean to offend you. I don't know why I just went on that rant. Anyway, so I took on this relationship, and I think part of it was because I need a substitute for that, for kind of that guidance and that support that my mother gave me. And because I'm not close with my family, it was basically just her and me until my grandmother died about 14 years ago, and she was the most important other family member in my life. So it was just me and my mom and my cat. So I think I tried to substitute that support, and that backfired like nobody's business. I mean, I was just so out of place. And the problem is when you get someone like me with insecurities and low self-esteem and stuff, and I'm trying to figure out every detail of life, like why people do the things that they do. And then you mix it in with somebody else, maybe that has a low self-esteem as well and is dealing with their own things. It's just like this storm of just argument. It's just nothing but fighting all the time. And I don't enjoy that. I don't like fighting. And when fights do arise, I like to talk them out so we can get it over with. And I don't know if a lot of you have known these types of women, but there are women out there that don't want to talk. They want to shut down and make you pay. And that was my relationship. So that ended. We're still friends, I think. I don't know. She texts me. You may have heard the ding. That was just her texting me. But it seems a little hollow. It's not really a friendship. I think we're just keeping in touch to keep in touch for, like, history's sake. We only dated for, like, 3 months. So who knows? I don't know where that's going. Creatively, I'm doing all right, I suppose. I'm working on some projects, and doing this is going to help. Even if no one really listens, I'll just keep posting them. Just kind of call it an audio, you know, journal of some kind. Just for my own, you know, education and learning experiences and talking to people and maybe making relationships, you know, maybe I can meet new friends and stuff like that. But see, I went way off. The idea was, I was telling you earlier about, I didn't get to tell you about how a lot of these comedians are just not friendly. I think they're friendly if they think you have something for them. Be it information or, you know, a set or whatever. So I'm super careful about who I tell about that show, because I have the power to give them a spot at a show where a lot of people are going to see them. It doesn't make me some big shot. It's just something I wanted to do for people that needed the help, because all of my life I've wanted a break, and I've never gotten it from anyone. Anything that I have, it's because I've had to fight for it. So I was kind of hoping that I could get in a group with a lot of these other neurotic people who overthink things and just don't fit in well. And apparently I don't know if I'm too old or if I think too much for them, but they're not really accepting me. Now, that doesn't count for the ones that are in my class. Like, the people that I am starting with, who most of, I'm not even sure, are going to pursue comedy. They seem pretty welcoming. They're pretty cool. But I don't know how I get this feeling that they don't like me, but I feel that way with everyone. I'm just kind of under the assumption that everyone all the time just doesn't like me. I've always been like that. I don't know why I do that. So, hopefully, over time, I'll make some friends, and, you know, I want to learn with other people. I want to kind of grow up and say, hey, you remember that time 6 years ago when we used to play Deep Ellum? And they go, no. You know, and I'm like, well, okay. Just thought I'd throw that out there. Pass me that line of Coke. That's not something I want to happen. I don't want to get addicted to cocaine, so forget I said that. More editing to do on this podcast. So that's pretty much the gist of it for now. Like I said, I'll probably post a first interview in a week or so. And I wanted to just kind of make contact and tell you where I am as a person. And there's a lot more to tell. Like right now I'm sitting on my floor because I have no furniture in my apartment. And this is 2 months in. I've had this apartment too much. My TV is sitting on the floor, leaning against the wall. I'm not an adult. It's just ridiculous. I'm too old to be this disorganized. I'm not ready for in this kind of independence. Well, but at least I have a microphone and a recorder, so I can put this stuff down for you guys to mock me or, you know, maybe understand me. Maybe there's some people like there out there that are just like me and are gonna say, wow, there are other people that are like me and that, you know, don't get it. So, yeah. That's about what I'll end with. So thank you again for listening. I really appreciate it. I hope I didn't get too personal and put too much out there about myself. And if so, then this may not be the podcast for you because I'm probably going to get more open and more involved with, you know, what kind of a weirdo I am and more about relationships. And I'll tell a lot more about my mom probably because I think I need to do that. She was by far the most interesting character that I've ever crossed paths with. And this is coming from a person that, you know, is not mentally handicapped, but I'm just not, I just don't get it. I just don't get the world. So she was somebody that I found interesting. So my point is, everybody else is just kind of adapting to the status quo. Nobody's really trying to make themselves stand out unless there is money involved. Otherwise, everybody just kind of works within the cracks that we're giving and the paths, and I don't want to do that. That's not why I'm here. So if we got to get honest and we got to get real, then that's what we're going to do. I was thinking, I don't know if I should have like some sort of a sign-off or something like that, like tally-ho, and then we end the podcast. I do know. I heard somebody say this saying the other day about how some comedians, there are comedians out there that are considered comedians. So this is gonna be corny, but there are comedians and then there are comedians. I am neither. Good night.